Warning, the following program is not for the weak-hearted. Those who are closed-minded, or in general, you're scared to learn what's behind closed doors. Here at Sapphire's Airplay, I want you to pour the wine. Grab somebody that you want to hold on to, or better yet, get the vibrations stimulated through your body. Get ready for one hell of an orgasm in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. What is up, all you sexy motherfuckers out there in Radio Land? It's your girl, Sapphire, back at it again. And man, I'm excited for this. I know you guys say like, oh, you get excited every episode. That's because when I bring people on, I know that they're going to bring the truth. They're going to bring some realness, some real elements. And it goes without saying, this is another monster. I'm bringing all the monsters on. You know, if you got a story to tell, I'm going to bring you on. And I feel like when it comes to kink, y'all know I get down. Y'all know I get freaky deaky. I love a good sex party. I like a good, you know, play scene. Heavily into, you know, BDSM. But what does it make me feel as a Black woman in a kink space that, as I like to say, only has little drops of chocolate? Well, we're going to get into it today. And I am so excited to bring my guest because, first of all, he goes by the name Blacksmith on the internet, but also his name is Charles Peretti, known to those as the Blacksmith in the kink world, but he has been in several different kink communities for over 15 years. So it goes without saying, this man has some experience from organizing presentations on consent, scene building, to leading workshops and, you know, labs on impact, psychological play. I'm just so excited to have the Blacksmith, Mr. Charles, in with us. Welcome to the show.
I'm so excited to be here, Miss Sapphire. Thanks for having me, and greeting of the day to all of your delightful heathens out there. absolutely jazzed to be able to chat with you and to connect with them today.
Thank you. I mean, man, there's so many things that I feel like we can get into it. And I feel that it goes without saying, we're definitely going to talk about risk management and kink, but also, you know, centering BIPOCs, people like myself in the kink communities. And y'all are probably watching this, for those who are watching the special video podcast, saying, why is this white guy on here? How can he, you know, talk about being BIPOC in kink spaces? Well, Charles, let's talk about the journey. What made you become this leader in helping? How did you go from you being a sex enthusiast to now like an ally in these kink communities?
So I completely agree with kind of where you started, which is, and I want to make sure to say this at the onset, that the labor and the work that that needs to be done to continue to diversify and to build inclusion in our communities, and particularly in our play communities, that burden should not have to be on those minority and marginalized communities. It shouldn't be, just like in many of our other spaces, it shouldn't have to be up to those people, because those are the people early have been disenfranchised from either those spaces, either through exclusion, through a lack of knowledge of inclusion, or that the accessibility of those places. So for me, it's very kind of you to call me a leader. I just try and show up. I just try and be present. And I like to consider myself not just an ally, but also an accomplice. And that's why I'm public about my name. That's why I'm an advocate for not just for marginalized communities and not just BIPOC, but also there are differently abled communities. There are people with different bodies and different shapes in kink. And what we've seen is that as kink has become and BDSM has become more mainstream, increasingly, when you think, a perfect example is maybe the rope space. In rope, there's this prevailing attitude in a lot of communities that rope tops are strong, capable white men, and that, or men in general, and that rope bottoms are slender femme types. And so that automatically, from that framing, it tends to exclude people that maybe or have a different body shape or have various restrictions or limitations in terms of their physicality, their body, their age. But mostly it just puts people in the headspace where they say, that looks cool, but that's not for me. And that's one of the things that I think is so important about this. When we talk about the why, it's not for its own sake. No one should ever feel compelled that they need to interact or play with anyone that they don't want to. It's merely that I think we should reflect on these things as a place of need, because diverse communities help us grow and mature. And we learn new practices, new concepts, new perspectives. And in BDSM, it could be a new kink or fetish, could be a new way of playing, could be expanding your view of what's possible. And when we exclude that, we are not just making it less of an enjoyable experience for ourselves, but we are depriving those other people of being able to share in that. So that's just what I try and do. And we'll talk about maybe some of the practical things we can all do. But those are some of the reasons why this is such an important topic for me.
You know, I'm glad that you said that, because I feel that, first of all, you know, you said that you don't consider yourself a leader, but I'm like, you know, it does take just one person to stand up and see, you know, see that something is wrong in a certain community, you know, showing up and being there, that is showing a form of leadership, because now you are opening a space for people to have the uncomfortable conversations. Or, you know, if you see something, you say something. That's being a leader. And I think we, you know, have learned over the past 4 years, especially, not to say that racism hasn't been, you know, prevalent in these spaces before the George Floyds and, you know, all the Black Lives Matter protests. But, you know, as a Black woman myself, who is dating, you know, exclusively partners who are, you know, not melanin, you know, not Black, they are, you know, my girlfriend, she is Latinx. But, you know, a lot of people do focus on the point that none of my partners are necessarily Black. And, you know, I tell people openly, it's hard to find Black individuals in spaces that center around kink, that center around polyamory. Yeah, there's a movement going on. There is Black polyamory. There is Black kink spaces, but it depends upon where you live. And
absolutely.
Yeah. When I talk to people about being in LA and they're like, well, there's plenty of Black people, you know, but I'm like, take it out of that denomination of how many Black people are actually in kink and in yes. kink control spaces, and it gets smaller and smaller and smaller, you know.
Spot on. And we know from the numbers that less than 5% of adults identify as being part of a BDSM, kink, or alternative sex community.
Right.
So you're already down to 5% of the total adult population. And then from there, it's how many of those people are, like you said, are Black or people of color. And then from there, how many of those people are out? And then from there, how many of the, you know, like by the time you funnel it down, and this is why exactly to your
in
point.
The chocolate sprinkles, I like to say, y'all, the little chocolate
yep. sprinkles. And it's a thing where we would much rather prefer that we just turn on the nozzle and let all the fudge flow. Like we would rather it just be a thing where we have a wider plurality in the community, but it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, because we don't necessarily create spaces and encourage in spaces the diversity that we would want right. to then encourage people, BIPOC peoples and in some instances, queer peoples and differently abled peoples to come to those spaces. So then they don't come to those spaces. So then they're not in the community, and around it goes, and everyone loses. Everyone is less good off, or in particular is worse off as a result.
Would you say, and this has been just like a recent observation of mine that I'm starting to like think about, you know, now talking about like ableism and the different bodies and individuals that do get, you know, thrown into the kink world. Do you think it has to do with sometimes the acts of play, you know, when we talk about kink? Because of course we know BDSM, bondage, domination, submission, masochism, you know, then people automatically jump to, well, I don't want anybody hitting me. I don't want anybody degrading me. Well, I don't know how I feel about people pegging my ass. And it's like, there's so much more to, you know, the physicality.
And that's where, you know, I think the education piece, we go back to as far as the 1980s, and we'll talk about risk management, but you go as far back as the 1980s and a lot of the gay male clubs in New York and Chicago, their visions that when you listen to their vision statements and when you hear, you know, in writing what they would say things like, we are focused on, our purpose is to create a more supportive S&M community for gay, at the time, exclusively gay men, whether they desire a total lifestyle or an occasional adventure, whether they are just coming out into S&M or long experienced, our goal is to break down prevailing stereotypes and misconceptions. So that's the kind of attitude that's always existed. And that's another reason and we'll get into this, I'm sure, as well, that it's ironic, the center, it's tragic, the centering of kind of more predominantly cishet and males, but white men in particular, because BDSM at its core is queer and radical and has been countercultural for almost its entire existence, except in a few isolated places and times. So, but to your point about what you mean about play, you know, I think it's wild, because I've had people who are interested in kink and say exactly what you've just said, and they come to like a more lab style event. So when we say lab, for those who haven't done it, lab is more of a, as opposed to like a play party where the defined goal is more directed and sexual and intimate. Instead, lab is where you can try things out. And there's people generally are mostly clothed, like it's a lot less pressure.
Right.
Kind of almost like getting a group of friends together for a house party to kind of chat and relax instead of a rager. So, but I've had people that'll come and they'll test out some sensation play. You know, they'll have a feather draped on them. They'll have one of my favorite improvisational sex toys ever for sensation play is a set of salad tongs.
Wait, the one, what?
A set of metal salad tongs with the fork ends on them. And you have someone, you blindfold someone or have them close their eyes and you drag it on their skin and they have no idea what is happening. They think it's the worst, like the most dangerous that they get, you know, they either go one end or the other. They're either totally tickled by it and they think it's awesome, or they get terrified. And it's great because then they open their eyes and I'm like, no, it was a salad tong. I used this last week on some salad.
All that's going in my head right now is salad tossing. I know somebody out there is like, salad tossing just got a 2.0.
Yep. We are the 2024, the year of salad tossing 2.0. You heard it here first.
Bring it back, y'all. Oh my God. Well, you know what? Let's get into the risk management, because this is what I love about the kink world. You don't have to spend thousands, hundreds of dollars to fulfill the act of fear or, you know, submission. The fact that, you know, you can go essentially to Home Depot and find safe rope, you know, in a sense, or, you know, zip ties, essentially, surgical scissors, if you need to be, you can find these things. But I'm glad that we want to get into risk management, because I feel that people think risk management in kink stops at the line as getting tested and having condoms. But that is not the case.
No, and it hasn't been the case for in the directed community. It hasn't been the case, and we can go back as far as the early 1980s, and I'll just mention a couple of the kind of more predominant risk models, and we can kind of talk. I'd love to also hear about the way that you organize as well. But so we start in the early to mid 1980s is the first time that we hear about SSC, or safe, sane, and consensual. And David Stein wrote about this in a newsletter for GM SMA. And it's really as straightforward as it sounds. It's the idea of people who are playing in the safest way possible, of sound mind, and with everyone consenting. And safe, sane, consensual was actually the slogan for the Lesbian and Gay Rights March in Washington in 1987 and in 1993. It was literally like on a 40-foot banner in front of the march.
I actually don't think I remember that or knew that. So knowledge.
I found a picture online as part of my put together for this chat, and it was so wild just seeing. I was like, oh, SSC, 40 feet wide. Love to see it.
You know,
and then go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, you know, a lot of the times when we think about SSC and when we think about play parties in general, you know, there is what I've noticed, and I was in a conference last year. I've talked about this before, but I was in a conference last year by Dating Kinky, and we did like an East Coast, West Coast kind of comparison of how play parties are conducted. And I believe it was the East Coast that said they do not necessarily serve alcohol or any, you know, substances, because they feel personally that it does go against SSC. We're here on the West Coast. A lot of the parties that I attend, you know, substances are on the table, but there is a controlled bar environment. So how do you personally feel where there is kink being involved, but there's now libations being served that might, you know, counteract with the whole part of SSC.
And so that's where, that's a perfect segue to, if you fast forward about 15 years from the advent of SSC, you get Gary Switch, a member of the Eulenspiegel Society, otherwise known as TES, which is the oldest BDSM organization in the United States, founded in 1971. And Gary Switch, this is now the advent of the internet. Mm-hmm. So exactly what you're discussing is now, instead of isolated communities that are more geocentric because you only can really interact with the people that you're physically around, now we've got the internet. And so you've got online forums, communities, you've got people connecting and sharing ideas right. in a way that, you know, in the human history we've never done. And kink is no exception to this globalized change. And that's where we get, Gary Switch had postulated the idea of RAC, risk-aware consensual kink. And his critique of SSC was that it lacks risk aware. He said nothing is perfectly safe. Crossing the street isn't safe. Remember that we call it safer sex, not safe sex. If we want to limit BDSM to what's safe, we can't do anything more extreme than flogging somebody with a wet noodle. And he ends by saying mountain climbers don't call their sport safe for the simple reason that it isn't. Risk is inherent to the thrill. And I love that, because when you ask about, you know, and this is not, this goes beyond, I think, alcohol. Now, when you talk about people, you know, different people taking different substances and just being in some sort of altered state, that gets into part of the consensual and the risk aware. Because in that case, it's, if you are, I know some people that will not tie in bondage, they will not play impact, they will not do certain things in kink, if the person, particularly if the top, but also if the bottom, is not sober. But then there are other people who they say, I am comfortable with you flogging me, with you percussion impacting me, but if you've had a couple of drinks, I'm fine with that, but I'm not okay with whipping, because that requires maybe more of a that's more of a fine motor skill and more of a precision impact. So I'm that's where my comfort is. And that's where the communication piece is so important. And that's where, of course, the critiques of SSC kind of come from.
It's good that you know, first of all, you said that too, because I do feel that there's a lot of, I don't want to say faux dom culture, but
no, you can say it.
You know,
you can say it.
Yeah, like, you know, shout out to my girl Mistress K, and y'all know, you know, going back to a lot of the Moan chats, that's my boo on there. And I one thing that we always talk about is, if you have to go bragging around at a play party or even at, you know, a munch, oh, I'm a dom.
Yeah.
I'm out for this. I'm out. No, that's when my own personal risk, you know, red flag starts flashing. Because to me, a dom and even a sub doesn't have to go around in an open, like-minded community to express, to say, I'm a dom, I'm this, I'm that. You know, that shows almost like a hierarchy status. And for me, that makes me not want to play with you, because I'm going to have to ask, do you know anything about SSE? Do you know about risk? Do you know about fries? And if you can't say yes, or you say, yeah, I would love some fries, thank you, I'm hungry. No, that's when I automatically am like, no, we're not going to do this. You know, just like if a dom does not carry a safety kit, you know, with the safety shears, you know, knowing the signs when the play is no longer fun, and looking at, you know, the hands, the body tones, the coloring, discolorization of the body, you know, where impact play is involved, and they don't know what they're doing. That's really, like, essentially you're giving your life up in the middle of a scene when it comes to doming and subbing. I really do feel like at that point, your life is in someone else's hands, and it's up to them to call the scene. But also there's this, you know, factor where we have subs thinking that they are disrespecting the dynamic if they call cut in the middle. And it's like, no, you're not disrespecting your dom. You are clearly telling your dom, like, hey, reaching that threshold, we're going to have to stop.
I mean, I couldn't agree more with everything that you said. And we could talk just about one kind of play, whether it's, you know, rope shibari or whether it's impact play, breath play. Like, we could pick any nuance in the community and talk for an hour, like you said, about about the risks, about the warning signs, the education that you need. There's a reason why there's so many people with medical training, nurses, EMTs, paramedics, former military trained people who are in the community. And those people at almost every workshop, conference, convention I've been to, there are those kinds of classes about what to look for in rope, in impact, all the things you'd in breath play, all the things to look for. I think what's important, at least for me, is making sure that people, as best we can, have the tools and the language so that in the communication phase, you can best kind of vet and suss out what you're looking for. So, for example, like you said, in my group of friends, the word that we use is tumbler doms. Back in the day, it's a black and white picture of a guy, you know, flogging someone. He's like, I have my sub or my slave, and they are servient to me. And if you want to have this kind of, it's like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, if you, not every dom looks like Bane. Y'all like, I am Bane. Bring it on to Bane. No.
And to your point, and that's where I want to talk about language. There is a difference between top and bottom and dom and sub.
Ooh, let's get into that.
So dom sub is, or DS, is a power dynamic and a power exchange interaction. So top and bottom is just an alignment of generally who is doing a particular thing and who is receiving. So for, in a lot of the groups that I'm a part of, and one of the broader ones that I'm really lucky to be a part of now, there might be like a weekend retreat, and someone would say, is anyone interested in bottoming for, insert thing here, say, just to make it easy, bottoming for impact. Mm. Someone might say, oh yeah, I'd love to bottom for heavy thuddy impact. And then they'll go and they'll have a negotiation. And a couple of things, it's not inherently an overt power exchange in the way that, you know, something more DSE might be. But when you talk about dom and sub, now you're getting into power exchanges, you're getting into dynamics, you're getting into boundaries, and to a different set of boundaries and a different, if you will, a different sandbox that you need to very clearly set the boundaries for. And that, to me, this is not a hard and fast rule, but I will say, in my experience, when someone goes around saying the word dom to people they've never played with or whatever, say like, I'm a dom, or I'm looking to dom somebody, that to me is an immediate signal that this is not an experienced person in the community. That's not always true, and I don't mean to drag people, but that's been my experience broadly.
No, you know what? I relate with you so hard about that, because again, it's just, I don't know. It comes down to etiquette. You know,
at some point of it, it's an etiquette issue more than anything else.
Yeah. Like, you don't go over to someone's house and just go down to their fridge. You know what I mean?
True.
You don't just go to their fridge and you just don't help yourself in the kitchen, the bathroom, whatever. You ask for permission. And I feel like a lot of the times there's a lot of pressure that's put onto these kink spaces. Like, let's get into, you know, bringing in the risk management, but also bringing in the factor of race. I have been in several kink spaces where I might be maybe one of three, four, five Black people. Add the factor of age. So now I might be in a space where pretty much everybody is relatively 50, 60. I'm in my early 30s. So now people automatically assume if you're the youngest in the room, you're the horniest, you're on the menu and all this, or you're naive. So you're just going to trust anybody. But then it comes into, okay, is this person genuinely interested in playing with me, or are they genuinely crossing the line of fetishization? And that's...
You took the words out of my mouth. You are literally describing what the definition of fetishization is, which is less about the person and more about what the person represents.
Yes.
And that is a huge danger, both for the person being fetishized, of course, because it is harmful to them. It can be harmful to them in practical terms, physically and psychologically, but it can also be harmful to their outlook and perspective on kink, because we've all had bad experiences, but those bad experiences tend to be outsized. And this is part of talking when we talk about race and kink. Those negative experiences are so much more salient for someone that is aligning to an already problematic, broader environment of their day-to-day life. So meaning if you already feel like, not feel like, if you are already part of a community that is maligned by the institutions of the place where you actually live or where you actually work and those kind of things, and then you go into a kink space where it's meant to be, oh, this is freeing and liberating, and it's meant to be something that you can engage with, and instead it's the same bullshit, it's that much worse, because it's essentially like when you are off work and you're on your own private time and bad shit happens. When bad shit happens at work, you say, well, at least I'm still getting paid, but not in my free time, not in the place that's supposed to be sacred for me and supposed to be protected for me from all of that other horseshit. I chose to be here, and this is still not a space that's good for me. And I'll just make one quick note. We all have anecdotes about this, but for anybody who isn't sure, who still isn't sure about the issues of race and intersectionality and kink, Jennifer M. Davis is a research professor at a BSU in Minnesota. And in 2023, she published a paper on this intersection of race and kink. Her and her colleagues spent 2 years interviewing hundreds of attendees at dozens of organized kink events across the country. And they found that people of color were 16 times more likely to feel discriminated against at BDSM events, and 17 times more likely to feel fetishized by strangers in the way that they were approached, talked to, and engaged with. Mm-hmm. It's a real issue, and it is really hurting our community.
Okay, I had to take a breath because I don't think I've really shared the realness of being seen as a kink dispenser. And for those who are like, what's a kink dispenser? It's just like, you know, you're a kid in the candy store. You want to drop the dollar in and you get the candy. And for me, when I show up to these events, I try to escape everyday living. Okay. I have to wake up every day and be reminded constantly, hourly, I am Black. I am queer. I am Black and a woman in a society that I'm going to piss off. If I'm not going to piss off the white people for not being white enough in the workspace, I'm going to piss off the Black people who think I'm not Black enough. I'm going to piss off the queer folks in spaces because I'm not queer enough and talking about certain situations. It's a lot to carry. And I don't think a lot of my white counterparts understand the burdens that it takes to get out of the bed every day and try to not turn on the news or turn on any type of media and not be constantly reminded of your race or of your background.
I definitely do not want to analogize my experience to anything like what you just shared. And I appreciate you sharing that, by the way. I know that that's not an easy thing to talk about, because this is also a space that you have cultivated in a way that is for you to do a thing that you love. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate you bringing that here, even though it's hard.
It is. It is.
Go ahead.
No, I mean, so like when you said that, and you break down the marginal of like 16 and 17%, that might not seem like a lot, but in already a space where there might be 50 Black people to 200 white folks, or, you know, maybe even smaller percentage of like Native, you know, Indigenous folks and Asian folks and Hispanics. It's a lot, y'all. It's like, yeah. You know, we try to say like, oh, I don't see color. Like, I'm sorry, but the whole saying of like, I don't see color, that means that you're not staying in tune of what the fuck is going on. A lot of us go to the kink world to escape constant reminders of who we are in society. And when I hear people freely talking about, you know, the race fetish, and I've definitely talked about this in the Moan space, and even with some Moansters like King Dom, and there's some other leaders, and race play, you know, they try to, people are almost like stunned that I'm not into it. And I'm like, why would I be into something that is genuinely degrading me even more as a person? Like, I'd be damned if my fiance, who is white, just all up in the sudden, you know, changes our dom sub dynamic and just wants me to call him Massa, not Master, calls him Massa. And, you know, I'm going to be wearing some Pickaninny style hair. And if you don't know what Pickaninny is, please go and do your research, because I've provided y'all with enough resources, you know, after 15 years. If y'all don't know what I'm talking about, go and read a book or two. You know, I'm done. I'm not going to say I'm done trying to provide and like dumb it down. But no, this is me getting real. Like, there's a difference when my fiance or any of my partners want me to give up my power, and it's not asking me to give up my identity as a Black woman. And that might not be the case for everybody who, you know, indulges in race play, but that's how I personally feel. Race play, I do not want to be constantly reminded of the blacker the berry, the sweeter the juice, or, you know, ooh, I love me some chocolate women. Like, okay, cool. Thank you. Calm the fuck down. I'm more than just being chocolate, okay? Like,
I mean, there's so much there to unpack. So I'll try to go back to front, because I think what you described perfectly hits the nail on the head about when we talk about like what can people that look like me do in kink or not do in kink spaces to help to kind of mitigate, ameliorate, and make better these situations of diversity and inclusivity that in some places we're lacking. And one of them is we owe it, everyone in a kink space, by the way, and this is more of the, speaking of risk management, when we get to the idea of, in the 2000s, we get to the idea of prick, personal responsibility, informed consensual kink. We don't really know where this came from, but this started as an idea of the other things like in RAC, but also preeminently and at the front of the acronym, personal responsibility. Each individual is 100% responsible for being educated, being honest about their feelings, concerns, and boundaries, and recognizing the part that they play in the overall scene.
It's that favorite word of mine that I like to say, accountability.
Yeah.
It's accountability. Yeah. That's you
have to
is.
Be, you have to be, and the only way that you can be accountable is to start, when we talk about practical things we can do, first you have to self-reflect. What is it that I'm looking to get out of an experience with a partner, with a community, with a group, at an event? What is, and I firmly recommend people write this down, by the way, because shit is real when you write it down. Things immediately become real when they are on paper. So what are the values that you hold around eroticism, kink, and intimacy? Are you willing to play with people that don't hold those values? Do you want to be part of a community that doesn't hold those values? Are you willing to do any labor to take a partner, a community, a group of people, and help to bring them to that value state that you think is important? And I think what you described particularly, like, so that's with community stuff more broadly. But when you talk about things like race play and everything, like I said, I do not want to analogize myself or my experiences to those, but I will, to those that you've had. But I will say that part of kind of, if I want to call it like my second awakening in kink, intimacy, and what I consider and my own sexuality, that started for me because I had to have some very real conversations with myself about why I didn't feel like I was necessarily always connecting intimately with partners that I was sexually active with. And what I learned in really interrogating this, and with the help of therapy, everyone, if you can afford it, go to therapy. It's a great tool in the box. Go to therapy. Also get a cat or a dog, but go to therapy. And what I learned was that about myself is that I realized that authenticity is the most important thing for me in terms of what connects me to someone and makes me want to play with them. And that authenticity is specifically for me about, does this person want to play with me because I'm the blacksmith and I make really fun kink things and I've run interrogation scenes and kidnapping scenes and I do impact play and edge play and, you know, orgasm control and I build these scene building is my favorite thing. And so I build these big sexy scenes. I take ideas that somebody has and I operationalize them and help them realize a kink or an idea or a fetish that they had. Does that person want to play with me because of what I do? Or does that person want to play with me because Charles seems like a really interesting person? Charles seems like the kind of person who aligns to my values, communicates the way that I like, is respectful in the ways that he needs to be, and disrespectful when consented and boundaried, in the ways that I like. Is it because of Charles? And so I'll pause there. But that's essentially for me. I can understand what it's like to be looked at as an object, less than as the sum total of me as a human. And then and when I had this conversation with a friend of mine who's black, he said, "Welcome to the party." And I said, "Holy shit." And he's like, "That's what it feels like all the time." Cause he's like, "I go and I'll have, you know, a white couple approach me and they're like, will you be my, bull.
Yeah.
Will you be my bull?" And he'll turn to the, and he's like, I got to the point where I turned around and be like, "Have you ever Googled the word bull in the context of like American history and say, I don't know, slavery? Like, do you have any sense of like kind of the," and again, different people use different terms and I understand it, all of the things, but if we are trying to move to a place where we're a little bit better about these things, there is a really nasty connotation to those kind of ideas in communities. And it's like, why did they approach me? Is it because I'm attractive? They haven't talked to me yet. They don't know of my personality. I could be an asshole, mm-hmm. but it's because I'm a 6'1" black man.
I know you saw me light up when you said that, because that is the constant thing that I have been bringing to the conversation of Moan to certain individuals who seem to use the word bull very freely in the way that they talk about black people. And I would hope that I'm somehow breaking the barrier and breaking that think process, because when I tried to say it and said, you know, the way that y'all are using the word bull is like, you might as well just call me the N-word. And I'm not talking about Negro, you know, but you might as well. Like, because the way that you throw it out, or just like, I like black cock and would you suck black cock with me? Yeah. And it's like, just because I'm a black woman, how do you know that I'm attracted to black cock? Y'all, I'm attracted to everything. I love my people. But also I'm very protective of how you're going to address me as a black woman when it talks about my black kings and princes out there, you know?
It's the assumption, and it's particularly what underlies the assumption.
Yes.
It's the same thing of, you know, there's this prevailing attitude in the cishet community for cishet males that if gay man, then will hit on me. And it's like, I got news for you, my brother in Christ. All right. You with your, never mind. I don't want to go there.
We could go there. Let it fly.
You with your 30-year-old cargo shorts and your like half ankle high white socks that haven't been washed in 20 years and your busted New Balance, and you're out here and you're like, and there's this put together, attractive metropolitan gay man. And all you can think of is, God, he wants me. He's going to take me in the back. It's like the luckiest person in the world would be you if he decided to be like, hey, do you want to stop off right now and go play? You would be lucky to have that. But it's like you said, it's an underlying bigotry that I think all of us, it just comes back to assumptions.
Yeah.
Making those assumptions and categorizing people based on assumptions is the first step down the road of dehumanizing people and taking away the agency and the respect of the individuality of a person. And if you wouldn't want somebody to treat you like that as a woman of any color, right? You don't want to be looked at as purely a sexual object. You want to be looked at as the sum total of your humanity and your soul and your personality and who you are. That's true for everyone and everything of every race, orientation, and ability.
Yeah.
So let's reflect on that and do better.
Please do better. And also, like, it brings it back to the basic rule of, just because you're at a sex party does not mean you have to have sex. Just because you're at a swinger party does not mean you have to swing with people per se. You know, some people just go because this is the place that they feel comfortable to socialize, you know, being naked in a social setting, or, you know, being able to
being around people like that, it creates that energy, right?
Exactly. To be free, you know, like you said earlier, you're out in the open because you're allowed to be out in the open. And there are so many people in the kink community who are teachers, who are leaders, that cannot speak publicly about the things that they do behind closed doors. And it shouldn't be that way. I feel that, you know, the teachers that were getting, you know, fired left and right for having an OnlyFans, my thinking process is, if they're not webcamming in the middle of teaching hours, what they do off campus in their, you know, normal 9-to-5 job, like, let's face it, teachers don't get paid a lot of money. So if they're looking for something of supplemental income and it's not doing any harm on camera to children, let them do what the fuck they want to do.
I mean, but you know where this all comes from. This is men trying to control women's bodies.
Yes.
That's all it is. It's trying to impose someone else's moral fabric on you, driven usually, not exclusively, but usually from a religious background, because it makes somebody feel like they are morally superior.
Yeah.
Well, we can't have someone like that. What do you mean like that? Someone who embraces their sexuality, someone who engages with consenting adults in a boundaried space, like you said, not at work, not around the kids, not exposing it to kids. Like, there are a lot of instances, and you know, this is not a rabbit hole that we need to go down, but there are a lot of instances of problematic behavior from so-called moral places that we've seen in society. And instead, this is just about this stuff around the faux outrage around OnlyFans and so on is controlling women. And of course, the continued repression of sex workers.
Yeah.
It is just 150%, and it has been, and sex workers have been a maligned group in Western society forever, and particularly in America. You know, we can look at anti-trafficking laws that drag in issues that then end up harming sex workers. The fact that there are certain banks that say, oh, we're not going to take, forget sex worker money for in-person sex work, we're not going to take OnlyFans money. Or that, you know, back in the day was, you know, it was like cam and photo money and stuff. Well, they'd shut down your business and freeze your assets and do those and take your livelihood away.
Yeah.
Because people are being present with their sexuality. And as somebody who worked construction in high school and worked on a roof in the summer in Florida from cash under the table, I am not sure how that giving up my body in that way and choosing to trade my physical health in exchange for money and compensation is any different than any other kind of work. If someone says, I'm choosing to use my body and to in a particular way for labor in capitalism.
Yeah.
So this is another place where there are so many fantastic sex workers, current and retired, that have done so much labor to talk about this. So this is something I'm a huge advocate for and a supporter of, but there are many people that can talk about this ad nauseum, but it is just another part of this puzzle that we're talking about.
Absolutely. Now, let's get into the non-consensual kidnapping. This is your forewarning, y'all. This is your trigger warning. Because again, we can't talk about risk management without talking about some of these very risque forms of play in the BDSM world, in the kink world. You know, there's a lot of spaces that thrive on the whole, like, no talking, just hookup, no conversation afterwards or before or during. We're just going to do the sex acts and be done with it. But when and where does that become a risk? And where do we find the protection? Because how can we, even in controlled sexual environments, prevent harm? with these types of play. Like, I'm not going to shun anybody who's into the non-consensual play. But for me, you were asking, like, how do I, you know, manage, like, the conversation of risk? I need aftercare. I need to have a pre-interview. Call it, you know, scholarly, if you will. And I hate it when I see a potential partner and they're like, well, you're coming off a little bit too school bookish and I just want to fuck. And it's like,
well, then I don't want to play with you.
Exactly. Because
pretty easy. Yeah, thanks for saving me the time.
Right. Thank you for saving me the time. Thank you for showing your true colors and not bullshitting me afterwards. Like,
true.
I've said it before that sex has become very, very more sacred to me now since my herpes diagnosis, since before. That's where my risk management, you know, came into place. The minute I was diagnosed with herpes, it was almost like I was being reborn in the kink and my sexuality, because now I can open up the conversation that people don't want to talk about but need to talk about when it comes to sex.
Love that. And I think the first place probably to start here, one level up from kind of the hands-on practical, kind of the how and the what and the why, is what is sex. This is something that is so integral to kink, to BDSM, and to the queerness of these communities. What is inherently queer about these things and radical about these things is, and why the phrase alternative sex has made its way into in almost all the risk management models. The K for kink is activities are generally classified as alternative sex. So what does this mean? It's again part of like a secondary awakening that I've had in my life around not just my sexuality but what I define as sex.
Mm-hmm.
Most people, when we said sex when we were 20 years old, are thinking penetrative sex in a very like heteronormative way. But one of my favorite things to do, if I'm lying in bed or lying on the couch with a partner and we're talking about something sexy we've done before or something that we'd like to do, or we are watching, reading, engaging with some adult content, and we are separately, individually masturbating ourselves, but we're next to each other and we're present and we're doing that and it's just very sexy. Is that not sex?
It is.
And by the way, for those of you who have never done this, it is so, so hot. It is absolutely erotic and delightful because who knows your body better than you? You know how to get yourself off. And it's like masturbation on steroids, because you've got your partner with you. You've got somebody who obviously you find attractive and you like, and you're both interacting and engaging, but there's no pressure of, you know, because we think about all of the pressures around orgasm and all of that. We could have an entire probably hour conversation about how people fixate on orgasms. But
the wheels are turning. I'm like, fuck it. I need a part two with Charles because we can go on and on because yes. Yes.
But like you said, what is sex helps to define then the next step, which is the conversation that you have. Mm-hmm. So if your definition of what is sex is, and for me, my definition of sex is anything that is erotic and intimate. That's it. That simple.
Yeah.
And when you start from that position and then you move into then the nuts and bolts of kind of the how, for me, the way that I practice is I think that the negotiation is super sexy. I think it is incredibly hot. What I've done is that I've created, because I, like you said, I love that people have accused you of the same thing that I've heard. I've heard occasionally feedback from myself, which is that they say that like it's a little too rote. I have created what I call the checklist, and it is literally an Excel spreadsheet. And I share this publicly with anybody who wants it. I have a template, a blank of it. And it is like 150 different kink acts bucketized by, is it bondage? Is it impact play, et cetera, et cetera. But at the very top is some of the most important things. What arouses me is, what turns me off is, what I would like to get out of this scene is. And so for me, what I'll do is I'll go with a potential play partner, or even with an existing partner, a romantic partner, an existing play partner. If we're going to maybe do a scene, a style we haven't done before, something that maybe has an intensity or a higher risk to it, we'll go to a bar and we'll sit down together and I'll have my iPad and we'll sit and we'll go through the checklist together.
Oof.
What are you interested in? And usually we fill it out before, but it's yes, I'm interested, but I don't have experience with that. no, I'm not interested in that. This is a maybe for me. Let's talk more about it. I think it's super hot. You honestly sit together and the two of you go through it, and then and you get to hear, and you get, and it creates a comfort. It creates trust. And for me, what's so important to me is it creates authenticity. Because I say that we now talked for an hour. I know that this is something you're really interested in. I'm going to go put hours of my time into building a scene and creating an environment to realize what you want.
That, ladies and gentlemen, is true Dom behavior. Someone who goes back, does the negotiation, and does their fucking homework. Because I cannot tell you how many times I just tell my fiance on the fly, like, ooh, I'm feeling like being Dom tonight. And he will openly tell me, you know, I have to be put in a mindset of that. I have to, you know, put in the time and work. Like, I have to really think this out. And I respect that. I do respect that. And I feel like the negotiation is foreplay.
Exactly.
Negotiation is foreplay. That's your, you know, your sexual playing field from our sapiosexuals out there. Nothing better than talking about sex is going into thorough, you know, investigation of a partner and getting to know, like, what turns them on, what turns them off.
I couldn't agree more. And when we talk about managing risk, this framework has really helped me, because it susses out. Somebody may tell me, in I may be at a lab part, a house party, a lab party, a play party, maybe talking to somebody in the community, someone's, you know, DMing me or something, and they say, I am so excited for the idea of doing impact play with restraint. I love the idea of objectification, of being in challenging physical positions while I'm receiving impact. And I've had people in the past who have talked like that and have not actually ever done the thing.
Wow.
And that's not a knock on them. It's simply informing me. Then we go back to, with something like prick, we go back to informed. Partners proactively educate themselves and their partners on potential risks and needs. So now we're back to, oh, okay, this is something you really love. So let's go into the playroom and let's look at different kinds of restraints.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my current partner, my romantic partner, has been rope bottoming for a long time and is incredibly experienced. The depth of their experience is incredible. Hate handcuffs. They absolutely hate handcuffs. Tie them up with weird kinds of stuff, do suspension, do all kinds of, do floor work, all kinds of intimate stuff, strap me to a bench. No handcuffs. And there's myriad reasons for that. But the point is, like, that's the kind of thing you learn. And like, right, you said, it's sexy, and you can turn it into part of that, the front end. And then also you identify the back end. Do you need aftercare from me? Do you need aftercare from your romantic or more intimate partners? And I've had that happen where I did a kidnapping to interrogation to abandonment scene.
Oh, wow.
Ran the full gamut and needed help from friends. And I mean, literally, like, we snatch and grab somebody and brought them to a place that they weren't familiar with, and did physical and psychological play with them. And then abandoned them somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And the person that came and picked them up was not afterwards for aftercare was not me. It was their romantic partner. Because that was part of what we had discussed. And I've always asked, I've done enough of these scenes that I feel like I have a good enough anecdotal body of evidence to ask. And I'll ask afterwards, a couple of days, usually a couple of days later, we'll deconstruct together and say, you know, what did you like, not like, what was good, bad, what do we keep, what do we let go of? And I always say, the fact that you kind of knew, because we set some boundaries about what we were going to do or not do, did that take away from it? And they're like, oh no. No, in the moment, I had no idea. I didn't know that knife was dull. My brain couldn't process it. I was overwhelmed. Dope, you know, brain chemistry. It was awesome. I was also super turned on, which is a little embarrassing, but also really hot. You know, that's the joy of it. And like you said, that's where you can, it's so important to do that, because then you have the conversation about the risks.
Right.
And that allows you to play in that box more freely.
I was going to ask you, because, you know, going into these types of danger play, as I like to call it, you know, again, going back to the non-consensual part, what do you say about people that almost don't provide a space to assess, like, the risks? Like, do you do you prefer or not prefer? Do you advise people who are into the non-consensual, you know, more extreme play that checking in is not necessary, or, you know, negotiations are not necessary for that? Or do you still say, hey, I know what you want is like something that's more intense, but it would, you know, ease me to know that I'm not crossing a certain boundary and I'm not trying to take it out of the fantasy that you want. But for my own safety, for my own concern as the person who's essentially, you're putting your life in their hands, or you're putting your life in my hands, what are some of the things that we have to do to prevent danger from happening?
So the first thing I'd say is that danger, like what Gary Switch said about Rack, danger is present. Mm-hmm. It is risky. And when you start talking about blood play, needle play, knife play, you know, physical, just rough body play scenes, kidnapping scenes, the thing that most likely goes wrong is that somebody like sprains an ankle, or, you know, or strains a wrist or that kind of thing, because of the, or somebody one time like strained their neck because, nice, you know, they weren't expecting it and they kind of snapped their head around. It's risky. Mm-hmm. So the first thing is, I think before you even talk about anything, is, again, we go back to the why the risk model matters, is because you and your partner both sit down and look each other in the eye and say, no shit, this is risky. Mm-hmm. And here are the risks. And if you're not sure of those things, then you need to talk to people and get informed. And there's myriad ways to do that. And away you go. The other thing that I'd call out is there's this weird idea for people that are generally less experienced in the community, that checking in is unsexy and that it breaks the fantasy and takes away from it. Two things there are true. One, that's bullshit. And second, there are great ways. I understand the sentiment and there are great ways to work around that. So for example, my partner and I, when we want to check in day to day, because we have a DS dynamic as well, but that doesn't always work when you've got jobs and family, when you're, you know, around people in a public space. Maybe you're just not in the headspace for it, like, right, you called out before. So we've developed a language, a very quick check-in that we use that isn't like, hey, are you up for some dom sub play? I will generally, if it flows one way or the other, and it does flow both ways. 2024, by the way, for your fans, is the year of the Switch. But 2024 is the year of the Switch. But my partner and I, we will say to each other, are you feeling small right now?
Oh, interesting.
And if the answer is yes, then it's game on.
Yeah.
If the answer is I am, but, or if the answer is no, and away you go, right? You can do the same things in a scene. And that's, your listeners are going to be tired of hearing me say this. It goes back to the negotiation, because then there you can say, what is the, not just like, you know, the hard shake your head no means, mm-hmm, stop. If my mouth is full or occupied, or red, amber, red, yellow, green, or, you know, yes, no, stop. All of those things are great. You agree to them, but you can build a layer into that where you say, so if I'm going to check in to make sure you're okay, I'm going to ask you this question or say this phrase. And that helps to keep, you know, it can be centric to the mood. So if you're doing a professor student scene, then maybe it's, you know, are you still working? Mm-hmm. Like if you're having them say fictitiously, like doing homework or doing an assignment, and you're, you know, you physically correct them, or, you know, you discipline them if they get the answers wrong, right? If you're thinking about role playing, it might be something like that. Are you still working? Are you still doing your assignment? You can do things, and you can create check-ins that are specific to that environment that don't pull people out, and also make sure that you are mitigating risk.
That's what I love to do. I've definitely said in further episodes, and now I feel like if I'm at a play party, I'm gonna have to change my coding with my partners. But the phrase that we use is, are you hydrated? And if I say I'm dehydrated, that means that, you know, I need a break. I need a moment. You know, do you want me to get the water for you? That means, you know, do you want me to come with you? No, I'll go hydrate myself. Or if I say I'm hydrated, that means, hey, all systems go, I'm good. We don't have to worry about it. You know, that way it doesn't take out of the scene. Cause I feel like a lot of the times, you know, even non-verbally, it does sometimes take out of the scene. But, you know, when you build that connection and communication with whoever is involved, you know, it does make the play a little bit sexier, but also it's an understanding of like, hey, things happen. What we planned sometimes doesn't go as planned. And instead of ruining everybody's pleasure, this is just my way of saying, I have to take a break. I'll come back to y'all when I feel, you know, ready to come back into it, you know.
I love that. And I think it's also important to call out that pleasure is secondary to well-being.
Yes.
Pleasure broadly is a component of our human well-being, but in the moment, someone's mental and physical well-being is more important than a moment of pleasure that can be recreated again.
Absolutely.
So there's that piece of it. And then to your point about the check-ins, there's also, again, there's really sexy ways to check in with somebody. I've done some pretty intense impact scenes. And this also gets back to what you'd said before about fake DOMs. One of my favorite things to do is kind of more of like a push-pull dynamic with a person where, you know, I'm just going to town on somebody. And then I'll lean in next to them and I'll just, you know, I'll ask, I'll say, you know, I think you're doing so great right now. Can you take a little more? And you just, right? And you just, and if they say, oh, I don't know if I can take any more, then you know that that's change gears. You can move to a different toy, a different place on the body, a different whatever. And I've checked in with people afterwards and I've said, you know, it did that kind of take you out of it? And it was like, oh no. No, because now it started to help me get into more of a subby mm-hmm. headspace where I wanted to take more for you, or I wanted to take more to prove I could, whatever it is that's the driver for people that trend on the, you know, the more masochist side of the aisle. That's both sexy and it's practical. It allows you to continue to play in the sandbox instead of limiting what we can do because you're like, I'm a dom and you'll take what I give you. It's again, shut the fuck up. Yes. Take your toy somewhere else.
You know, it's like the whole thing goes, you know, words do matter. And I feel like words and actions do matter, especially in the world of sex, because again, it's not just a one-sided pleasure. There's multiple pleasures being involved. There's a lot of personalities being involved. And first and foremost, it's like, there are bodies, there are people involved. It's not just a one-sided conversation. And I'm so glad that we had to have this conversation because I feel more than ever, like you said, you know, in 2024, this is the year of the switch. I would also say this is the year of re-enlightening for sexual experiences. You know, people are slowly coming out of, you know, quarantine and COVID, and, you know, places are opening back up. You know, there are more sexual experiences to be explored and ventured into, but we also have to bring it back to, at the end of the day, it's not just our pleasure that's involved. We cannot be selfish, okay? We cannot be selfish in our own pleasure, because especially if we're trying to give pleasure to another person or have a shared experience, you want that person to keep coming back for more. And even if it is a one-time thing, you got to make it more personable. You got to make it more personable. So,
and a big way that we do that is coming all the way full circle is, like you said at the beginning of the conversation, it's by creating the kinds of play spaces, clubs, organizations, groups of friends.
Yes.
That are the kind of people that are welcoming, that focus on mentorship and engagement and the right practices and the right behaviors and the right ways of communicating so that everyone is better off.
1,000%. And, you know, furthermore, I just want people to understand that you are a person, you are valid, you are seen, you are heard, you come to these spaces to be heard. And I hope that the lessons of Charles and, you know, just what I try to do with Sapphire's Earplay is really just try to change how we see each other in a sexual setting. You know, your age, your race, your identity shouldn't have to be the main focal point. Just be a good person. Show up. Speak out.
Show up as you are.
Yeah, show up as you are. Speak up when you feel like you can't. You come to these spaces to be seen and heard, and you will be seen and heard, but you also got to make that rumble. you know, if you will. You have to sometimes make that rumble, that thunder, or whatever it may be. You have to let it be known, because if we don't speak out about it, we can't learn from those experiences.
We can't change the nature of things by doing the same things we did before.
Absolutely.
Charles, couldn't agree with you more. I love it.
So good. Where can people get in touch with you? What's coming up next? Is there anything coming up that, you know, people should be aware about? You know, where can they get in touch with you? Just all the good things.
I appreciate it. I'm also fortunate and privileged enough that I don't sell anything. I don't, you know, have a storefront. I don't any of those kind of things. The things I do on social media and the connections that I make in kink are purely the furniture. I create sex furniture as the blacksmith. I make impact toys and knives and sex furniture and those kind of things. I do it as a labor of love and joy, and I'm able to do that. And I don't sell any of my work. So if anyone ever wants to reach out, if you have a thought that occurs to you, if you have an idea, a concept, if you just want to connect, I'm an East Coast friend, if that's at all helpful, but you can find me on Discord at @the_saltycaptain. You can find me on FetLife at @theblacksmith_. Or you can connect with me on Instagram, Twitter, any of those @the_saltycaptain.
Beautiful.
Yeah, which is my, funny enough, my other moniker. If any of you also are into gaming and blacksmithing and all that, feel free to find me on streaming on Twitch @the_saltycaptain. That's a harken back to my old military days, but that's another thing that I do as well. And I know this is going to surprise you, Miss Sapphire. I know you're going to be absolutely blown away. During my Twitch streams that have nothing to do with kink always comes up.
That's, I know, hilarious. You're shocked. Yes. Shocked. No. You know, it's funny. Early days of Sapphire's Earplay, when it was still called Erotic City, I used to stream on Twitch and PlayStation.
Hell yeah.
And people were like, this is a gaming site. Why are you talking about sex? And it's like, nerds have sex too, y'all.
Yeah, nerds have sex too. Let's not be, we were having sex. We were role playing long before any of you got here.
Oh my God. Come on now.
I love it. Thank you again for having me. And thank you for really opening the space for a great conversation. This is part of what I absolutely love about the community. So thank you for the time.
Thank you. Oh my God. Got me speechless over here. But no, I'm already thinking, like I said, I want to bring you back already. You know, I like to give the earbuds a nice little ear space from guests, but Charles, you're a certified earbud. I just want to say, you know, thank you again, because I'm so glad to have this conversation with you. And I feel like I just known you, in this brief time. I feel like I just know you, and there's so much to uncover. Again, it just, little morsels go a long way, y'all. It really does. Now.
Yeah, and if any of your fans, any of your listeners, if there's any topics that you think that Miss Sapphire and I would be the right combo to talk about, send it in. Let us know. Reach out to either one of us, and we will absolutely, I'm sure, we'll do this again soon.
Fuck yes. And speaking of, you can reach me at MsRadioSapphire.com. That's MsRadioSapphire. That's also Ms. Radio Sapphire on Instagram and Sapphire's Earplay on Instagram. Remember, y'all, I am not on Twitter. Fuck it. That's okay. It's all good. Moan, you can find me at Ms. Radio Sapphire. Join the Moanster Squad. Join in on the conversations. We had a very interesting conversation about a month ago about feet. Something that I never thought I would talk about, but I found somebody that I want to bring on. So that's going to probably be coming up soon. As you guys know, there is the video podcast. Please subscribe. You know, it takes listeners and viewers like you to keep me going, and I'm still learning a lot and getting out of my comfort zone for you guys, not just only to hear me, but to see me. And I'm really trying to think of some different ways to incorporate video. So if there's an idea you want to see me do, let's do it. It's a test kitchen. This is what I'm all about. So again, safe sex is the best hot sex. Till next time, y'all. Good night. That was the show, all you sexy motherfuckers out there. Remember to follow at Ms. Radio Sapphire and Sapphire's Earplay on Instagram. Want some eargasms of the past and future? Make sure to follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and all streaming platforms.